This is Dylan, and I'm here with our guest, Dustin. Would you please introduce yourself?
Thanks for having me on, Dylan. My name is Dustin Cantor, and we've been friends for a few years now. We met through the Dragonfly.
Yeah, he's, of course, Gil has been featured on our podcast before. Make sure and go back and take a listen to that, kind of hear how he ends up introducing people through his activities and endeavors through DC.
There was this one time where you and I, we were on the corner of 7th and 8th Streets Northwest. And it was after doing our citywide access to healthy food redistribution, because all the food in the center of the city would go bad unless it was redistributed to the edges of the city or the quote-unquote food deserts. And it was the crazy day where there was so many avocados. There was like 25 cases of avocados.
Yeah.
And we took one case out onto the corner. And what did we write? Well, say something nice about your grandma.
Yeah.
And win an avocado.
Wow. I almost forgot about that day. Yeah. I think we were right in Gallery Place and had signs and were just sparking happiness and joy in people's days by offering them free avocados. And a lot of people didn't even know what avocados were, but we're openly receiving them. And it was quite a day for sure.
It was a lot of fun.
So, Dustin, you've done a lot of pretty, you know, incredible things here in D.C. One pretty notable thing is you ran for mayor of D.C. last year. Can you talk a little bit about your campaign? You ran under a progressive independent. Can you explain a little bit to the audience what that is? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, so we ran a bootstrap, grassroots, shoestring budget campaign. We got 15,478 votes and citywide access to healthy foods, as we just said a minute or two ago, was one of the main issues. And beyond that, it was a lot of shaking hands, meeting people, listening to their problems and issues with the city. It was an amazing experience where there was several times where within a minute or two of meeting someone on the street, they would start crying because of how their story would bring them to tears, whether it was through happiness or sadness. And one of the biggest lessons that I learned through the entire experience is to take care of yourself even more than what we already know, which is take care of yourself. Compartmentalizing all the emotions that you go through when you meet people. People are putting their problems onto you. And at the end of the day, as a candidate, you don't have the power to change a lot of their situations, but you want to do as best you can. So the entire experience was one where we certainly made an impact, you know, each day or each week in certain scenarios by making connections. And in 2022, we'll do it again.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of your job was really listening to the issues and struggles that, you know, D.C. locals were going through. And you're from D.C., correct? How long have you lived here? And, you know, what's your story growing up?
Yeah, so I'm a DMV kid, and I was born in Silver Spring, grew up in Rockville. My dad's from D.C., grandparents, great-grandparents lived in D.C. as well. So this is certainly home. And, you know, growing up here in the area, I had my D.C. experience as a kid, and I had my suburban experiences for the most part. I lived in the Midwest for college and after college, and after 8 years in the Midwest, decided to come back home because this is where my family and friends are. And it's an amazing place. D.C. is, it's unlike any other place where you can connect with some brilliant minds. Especially when it comes to, as I know we're going to talk about, the environment, sustainability, regeneration, some of the brightest minds. But at the same time, D.C. is a city, and I do love to get out into nature. So definitely like to spend some time outside of the city on a regular basis, you know, a few times a year.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get into a little bit about your travels and parts of the world that you've seen. Want to stick on the politics one more time. And how did you end up getting into politics? What was that track, and where did you find that interest?
Yeah, so in fourth grade, I moved from one side of Rockville, Maryland, to the other side, spring break of fourth grade, and I didn't know anyone. There was 2 months left in fourth grade, and my first week of school, they said, all right, student elections, you know, for the following year. And I ran for vice president against the prettiest girl in school, and of course I didn't win, but it was a fun experience. And
I think you're pretty.
You know, okay, all right. I get it from my mom, I guess. So in high school, I did student government, but here's what really happened. I was 30, turning 31. I was doing some travels and I was reflecting on time, how what I'm doing now will impact 10, 20, 30 years down the road, you know, decades of time. And I went back and I thought about what I enjoyed doing as a kid in grade school, and sports, math, politics. These were things that I did in grade school. Wow. And so I figured if I liked doing it in grade school, I'll probably like doing it when I'm a senior one day. So I said, why don't I reintroduce politics into my life? And looking at DC, some of the biggest problems when it comes to housing, the only way to make an immediate impact is through the mayor's office. And the mayor's office is the pulse of the city. It's the vibe. It's a representation of the people. And it's an office right now that represents wealthy real estate organizations and doesn't represent the issues of an everyday person. And I said, this is worthwhile.
Yeah.
It's a win-win situation regardless of what happens. And I'll dedicate my 30s to doing this.
And really like develop mastery, like because you realize as a young kid, this is something you're interested in, revisited, which I think is amazing. What was one of the stories that you maybe heard from locals in DC that really impacted you of the problems that are affecting the city and one that really resonated with you that you one day could fix?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, like there was this guy, Dennis. He was, I think, 66. He was in his mid-60s. I met him. He was wheelchair bound. And this was like South Columbia Heights, just north of Florida Avenue, just off of 14th Street near Malcolm X Meridian Hill Park. And so he was one of the people that started crying within a few minutes of telling me his story. He was struck by a stray bullet in the spine and became wheelchair bound. And he has a bag for his urine that follows him around on his wheelchair. And the saddest part about it was that he's born and raised in D.C., and when he was going through rehab, he was placed into a facility, a care center environment in Maryland, out in Prince George's County. And he's like, I'm from D.C. I should be where I'm from, where I live. So he's living in D.C., but he gets shipped out to Maryland for his care. And so when it comes to taking care of our own people locally, we can do a better job of that.
Wow. Now that's really important. I mean, spending the money to move someone out of state just to take care of them, that seems ridiculous. And I'm sure you kind of realized and heard a lot of things that didn't make sense. And so you're, you know, continuing to campaign for 2020, correct? And when's the next election?
2022 is the next campaign for mayor. One more thing that doesn't make sense. The Office of Campaign Finance records the hearings on cassette tape.
Still.
Cassette tape.
Yeah. Wow.
Who like it's like dumbfounding.
Well, I mean, so you are an entrepreneur and have had history in, you know, entrepreneurship. what are some of the businesses you've started, and you know, how could you bring that, I think, to mayor, the new mayor's office, and what have you learned in those past businesses that, you know, you could have throughout your campaign?
So there's four businesses that I have started from scratch and operated as an adult. So I won't touch on the ones when I was a youth. So when I was a freshman in college, I had a problem, which was, what do I do with my belongings at the conclusion of my freshman year? I think I was an out-of-state student.
We all have that problem. Yeah, that's yeah. Totally.
And so our slogan was moving sucks. So I started a moving and storage business, providing solutions for college students to help them move their belongings, place the belongings into storage over the summer while they're studying abroad. International students use this service. And I ran that business 4 years during college as well as after college, and being able to do residential moving and storage as well. And that was the most labor-intensive, wow, physically demanding job I've ever done in my life, which still doesn't compare to, for say, example, you know, moving asphalt in the Phoenix, you know, summer heat.
Yeah.
But still, don't get me wrong, in the Midwest, in the summertime in July, moving a house in 95 to 100 degree heat for 12, 14 hours, the beers went down super fast at the end
intense,
of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's all versions of that type of business now, like college hunks, right? The whole, you know, people.
I actually passed one of those today.
Did you? Yeah. Yeah.
I did.
They probably got the business idea from you.
Well, they started doing junk removal, and okay, then they got into moving. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, that's totally something that we're constantly, you know, faced with, is how do we get rid of all this stuff? You know, we have these new apartments, and, you know, we end up acquiring things from friends or people who lived there beforehand, and we have more stuff. And like, how do you deal with that? I mean, I'm sitting in your apartment right now, and you've got not a lot of stuff, honestly, for I think your age. I think it's pretty impressive, actually.
Well, I mean, there's the, what's her name? Marie Kondo. It's like, does it bring you joy?
She wrote, you know, that, what was that book?
Yeah, that Japanese woman about, you know, the art of tidying up or something like that.
Yeah, my mom's got it on her dinner table right now.
Yeah. I, you know, my metric or my sort of thing that I ask myself is, have I touched it in the last year?
Yeah.
And if I haven't, then I don't have a need for it unless it has sentimental value. Yeah. So when it comes to, items, I don't have a lot of items, but
for sure
I'd like to have fewer, actually.
Hey, we're all working on that minimalism track. So quickly back on the business, can you share any failures that you've had in some of your businesses? So you mentioned the college hunks.
Yeah.
One, what other yeah, businesses did you start? And
so, yeah, my college storage was a great business. It was an arbitrage business, didn't need a lot of money starting it up. I had a bagel shop for a couple of years. Wow. I started with a former best friend of mine, and we're no longer friends. So the failure at the end of the day, we were 50-50 partners in the business. We were best buddies. We worked together. We lived together. And we were two guys in our 20s. And when we had conflict or decisions that needed to be made about the business, we spent too much time together at the end of the day. And so the failure was having good balance. I don't call it work-life balance, but good balance with your business partners, because everyone needs their own space. And if you live with your business partner, we were roommates, that was a failure. So that business, wow, didn't last. And yeah, so if you're going to go into business and live with that person, you need to be mindful of, people need to spend time with their own hobbies. They need to spend time with other people. And it's something to keep in mind.
Wow, that is absolutely great advice for anyone listening. Something Davis and I, you know, experimented with a little bit before being in the backyard last year was, he ended up moving into the Fern in pretty close quarters. And there were times when it was very difficult. But I think, yeah, that time alone really gives you time to recharge, bounce, you know, those ideas off yourself, off other people, come back, and then come back with even more strength and I think innovation when you see that person again, because that's when the magic happens again. You know, your creativity sparks again. I love that. Yeah. What else did you learn from some of your other businesses? I'm very curious.
So I would say, you know, right now I have a podcasting business, and before that was a software business, which still operates. So I've had like this clear line, and I'm almost at this like call it like 50-50 point where I did business for 8 years in the Midwest. And since I moved back to Washington, D.C. in 2011, it's now been 8 years. So wow. In my adult life as a 34-year-old, I now have 8 years of business in Illinois and 8 years of business in the DMV.
Wow.
So, you know, one thing that I keep in mind is there's like this saying where like if you're running a business, you're committing 3 felonies a day, you know, because you're innovating or yeah. You're doing things where there might be no laws or
right.
The law in place was applied for like 1932, yeah, you know, yeah. Or 1917 or something like that. So
it's not let the mayor's office hear this.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's the kind of thing where if you hold your mind in this place where you have to follow all the rules, you know, you're not going to be able to grow a business. Arnold Schwarzenegger has an excellent speech about this online. You can watch it about breaking the rules.
Wow.
So, I mean, if the governor, you know, says break the rules, then, you know.
Yeah. Well, I just listened to a podcast with the Uber CEO, and he was explaining how a startup is kind of like a fleet of pirates, and these pirates are going out and sinking these ships and breaking the rules, taking captives, and then until it turns into kind of a navy. And I think that's the transition that Uber's just made is, you know, they used to be this big pirate ship, but after their IPO, they've turned into much like more of a navy fleet, because they really, you know, they have that leader and they're, you know, in their right form. So I can definitely like understand that comparison. I think that's a really smart one to make for sure.
Yeah, a mutiny.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So yeah. Take a listen to that, that podcast with the guy who started LinkedIn. What's that episode? Masters of Scale. Yeah, for sure. So another question I've got for you is one of our values at, you know, Meta Creative is balance. And I think that's something that you've definitely held close to you throughout, you know, your campaign and every day. You're a yoga teacher. I'd love to hear a little bit more about your practice and what makes it different and unique and how you got into that.
So it's 2019. The first time I took a yoga class was in 2007. And at the time I was looking for something to balance or counterbalance the weightlifting. When I was a teenager, I used to be a wrestler. I used to lift a lot of weights. I continued to lift weights in college. And I thought to myself, well, I don't want to be like so bulky, you know, and then get even bulkier and bulkier where I end up like the governor, you know, one day. No offense to him. I just don't want to be that big. So I was looking for something to de-stress, to find some flexibility. I went to this yoga class in Urbana, Illinois. And it was the type of yoga class that you would think, you know, a Westerner would get turned off by yoga. You know, a woman had hair down to her waist, you know, flowing gray hair, old lady, incense all over the room and candles and everything. But at the end of the class, I felt great. You know, my mind, you know, I felt de-stressed. So I had taken a couple of yoga classes a year for a few years when I moved back to D.C. in 2011. I noticed there's yoga studios all over the place. Mm-hmm. I began to practice yoga a couple to a few times a week. And then when my mother's mother passed away, I was left $5,000. And I said, okay, well, what I do with this $5,000?
Wow.
And what I decided to do was take half of it and do a yoga teacher training.
Yeah.
Because I figured that it would be spending time on myself to improve myself.
Investing in yourself.
Yeah. And the other half was probably spent on beer and dating, and, you know, debauchery or, you know, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But I think I would have done right by her to invest half of it in myself. So I did a yoga teacher training in 2014. I had already been teaching a little bit of fitness. So I'm big into sport, and I wanted to make sure that I continued to stay close to something that I enjoyed as a kid, which was sport. Yeah. So teaching a little fitness and now teaching yoga is a way to stay close to sport. And I use the practices that I learned in my teacher training for yoga to stay close to sports, whether it's boxing or football or basketball, whatever it might be, by being the mentality guy. So I can see myself in my later years, perhaps when I'm twice the age I am right now, you know, being a mental performance coach, maybe of a local high school or college team or something like that, you know, in my free time, maybe as a volunteer sort of thing, helping people with their, you know, their mental state to perform on the field. And so it doesn't only apply to the athletic field, it can apply to the professional field. And, you know, I'm like everyone else. I got a lot of work to do. You know, I got bad habits and, you know, things that, you know, I got to get better at. So, you know, yoga practice for me right now in 2019 is getting back into playing golf. I used to enjoy playing golf on the public course when I was a kid, and I haven't done it for like 15 years really. Wow. So it requires you to have mental focus, and, you know, it's something that I can do when I'm really old one day. You can't play, you know, hardcore baseball, you know, when you're 65, 70 years old. And, you know, some people do, but
the yoga keeps you young.
Yeah, I mean, as best you can. Yeah.
So what are some of your morning routines? You talk about, you know, staying balanced and having that that health mindset coach. You know, what advice can you offer some of our listeners? Like how to wake up in the morning? What do you like to do?
So I don't have a particular morning routine. I follow some advice by Coach Lou Holtz. Lou Holtz was the coach for Notre Dame football for a long time. And, you know, there was one time I was watching him on TV as a commentator after his coaching days. He'd be on ESPN or whatever it might be. And he was just very simple. He was like, if it's the middle of the night and I wake up and it's 1 a.m. and I want a glass of OJ, I'm going to have a glass of OJ. And he basically was saying, listen to your body.
Yeah.
You know, if you need rest, rest. You know, if you need a glass of OJ, get a glass of OJ. Mm. So for me, my routine is improving the quality of my home space. So that means what food I'm bringing in, what items, whether like it's a chair or a magazine, whatever it might be, into my home space. So awesome. I don't see myself as I need to have a set morning routine or a set evening routine. I've definitely gone through phases in my life where like when I had my bagel shop, I was waking up at 4:30 in the morning, like 6 days a week. So I had a morning routine, which was alarm would go off, roll out of bed and get into the car within 10 minutes. and start drinking coffee as soon as possible.
Like, can you imagine that? 4:30. I mean, today I woke up at 5 a.m. and I'm exhausted already.
But I mean, you're hustling, you're moving around, you're doing things that, you know, ultimately are going to get you towards your goals or your purpose. Yeah. And so it's not as much work, I'm sure.
No, it's not. But I mean, I think I really resonate with what you mean is getting your space right and bringing in the right things that are going to keep your mind on top of it. So I definitely resonate with that. Like, I'm looking around your space right now, and I think, you know, at the bottom of your bed, you've got a trophy. It kind of reminds me of, I mean, how did you get this trophy? What is this? Is this back to your boxing days? You want to talk about a little bit of your...
Oh, I never boxed. I did wrestle.
Okay.
I do support our local junior boxing team through some fundraising and activism. I'd like to do it more. And it goes, you know, up and down and flows, and when I can devote more time. That trophy was from my great-grandfather.
Wow.
And so he lived in D.C. as an adult. He got that trophy as a kid. He was growing up in New York, and he was a track star, and he used to run the 100-yard dash in 10 flat, and he had a couple of records, and he got it from the New York Athletic Club. And the story behind that trophy is he got that trophy in the 1914-1915 season as the best track and field athlete in New York State. And so he was a sprinter, and at the conclusion of that season, he, in an exhibition race, beat Alva Mayer, and Alva Mayer was the 1912 Olympic silver medalist in the 100-yard dash. So my great-grandfather became one of the USA hopefuls for the 1916 games. World War One. There were no 1916 games. They were canceled. So I guess lucky for me, I might not have been born, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I might not have won the race to the egg if he had a different life path, you know. So, but yeah, he never ran the Olympics, and my grandmother, his daughter, gave me the trophy for my bar mitzvah, which is a ceremony as a 13-year-old in the Jewish culture where we read from the Torah and follow some, you know, some customs and things like that. And so she gave it to me as a gift.
That's incredible. I mean, yeah, a little memorabilia like that for sure would be inspiring. So who are some of your mentors? I mean, you just spoke about your great-grandfather, and are there any other like big mentors in your life that drive you, or, you know, you think about? And
yeah, so, you know, I have had different mentors at different times, whether they knew they were a mentor of mine or not. There's one gentleman that I spent some years, and he provides some mentorship to me, and he doesn't live that far away. He lives up in Baltimore, and I actually met him and his wife in 2007 in Chicago Midway Airport, and either he was reading a book or I was reading a book about finance, and we connected and started talking.
The airport connections are my favorite, absolutely.
Yeah, so we were both on the same flight. It was, you know, March 2007, and I was flying home for senior year of college for spring break to visit my family, and it was my brother's birthday. My brother's born on St. Patty's Day. Great day to be born, you know. Everyone always wants to celebrate. So this guy at the time was just him and his wife, and we kept in touch. I'm the oldest of three boys, so I didn't have like an older brother. So I kind of saw him as like an older brother. Like, he's not too much older than me. He's like almost 10 years older than me, something like that. And so we kept in touch, and, you know, he started to provide me a little bit of mentorship and advice when it came to business, because he had a JD and an MBA. Mm. He was a former basketball player at the college level. Wow. And so, yeah, like minds, you know, entrepreneurs. And so there was one day where I hit him up on the phone. It's like 2012. I'm back here living in DC, and I'd gone to this happy hour, and I was talking on the phone. I was like, oh, I went to this happy hour for this organization called Network for Teaching Entrepreneurship. They, you know, teach entrepreneurship to, you know, teenagers in middle school and high school. You know, I'd been doing that back in Illinois, and, you know, so I'm going to do it here in DC. And he's like, yeah, I love that organization. I'm a graduate of it.
Wow.
You know, from like way back in the day. I was like, wow. So that was, you know, another thing that kind of clicked. So his name is Luke Cooper, and if you look him up online, he has an ultra successful startup, and it's called Fixt, F-I-X-T. So it's like an on-demand repair service for your phone. Like if drop it and it breaks, mm-hmm. it's like the insurance policy quickly, like, and you can drop it off at a Home Depot, or they have all these, you can send it online, have someone come out and fix it. He had advertising at the Baltimore Ravens football game. I mean, he's crushing it, just wow. absolutely crushing it. And so, yeah, he's
one of your, yeah.
Yeah, he was a mentor for a while. And I haven't been able to get as much time with him, you know, in the past few years. He's got a couple of kids, and he's grown this business, but there was a moment in time for, you know, several years where he provided me some good mentorship.
Nice.
Yeah. So mentors kind of like come in and out. And, you know, now I'm talking with the founder of Network for Teaching Entrepreneurship. So once his book comes out in August, then we're going to be talking about a few things. But yeah, just different mentors at different times in life.
That's awesome. So what does entrepreneurship mean to you?
Entrepreneurship to me means being resourceful and taking your idea and making it a reality.
Wow. Yeah, and like manifesting it, saying it, repeating it, continuing the development of that idea.
Like, being iterative about it, being flexible, knowing that your purpose or mission is the same, but the way you get there might, you know, if you're on the pirate ship, you know, and then all of a sudden there's a big rock in the way, you're going to have to go around the rock.
Yeah.
Might be a longer course, a little more work for everyone to row the boat.
Well, I mean, we can definitely share this, that Beauty in the Backyard was actually spawned with you in the room, I would say. I think I remember you, Davis, and I kind of having a little bit of a powwow and explaining how we wanted to turn one of our parties with purpose into a 3 or 4 day long retreat. And we started looking at, you know, venues around the area, and the first like 3-4 venues were just not right. And we just kept on searching, and, you know, had this idea that this event was going to happen, but didn't, you know, weren't having the best of luck, like finding that one spot, until lo and behold, you know, it was right in front of us the whole time, keeping those eyes open.
It's interesting because, well, I don't say interesting, but I mean, you're going to have your second year, but you're almost at the third year, which is really this point where, you know, we had talked about, once you get to the third year, you know, you're going to have to continue to do the work and continue to be creative, but the hardest part will be done, which is like digging the basement level.
Oh yeah.
You know, which is backbreaking, you know, easier to do when you're in your 20s, for this sort of, you know, festival operation.
Yeah, for sure. Well, so where are some of the places you get your knowledge? Like, what are some books that you really enjoy recommending to others? What's your most recommended book to others?
So my number one is Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Of course.
By Robert Kiyosaki. It's a classic one that is high up there. After that would be The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss.
Classic.
Then after that would be Delivering Happiness. That's by Tony Hsu, the guy who started Zappos.
Yeah. Oh nice.
Yeah.
Tony Hsu or Tony Hsu. Yeah.
She. I think it's she.
Yeah.
Or sorry, H S.
Yeah.
E I. Yeah. He, Tony. Yeah.
He's a legend for the workplace culture.
And, yes. Exactly.
And, yeah.
There's an awesome story within that book, where I'm gonna butcher the story, but I'll get it pretty right. Pretty
close to the framework.
Yeah. So they were like in California. Okay. They're operating. And there was this point where they had to move their warehouse. I believe they had moved it to like Kentucky or something like that, because that's where like UPS headquarters is.
And a little background, Zappos is a shoe distributor, correct?
That is correct. You know, so it was like the original Amazon for shoes only.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
You go online and like they build up like a $1 billion business about, you need shoes, you go online, you order them from Zappos.
Absolutely. They were quick. They had everything.
Yeah. Great customer service. And there's this one story, and it reminds me of like the pirate story that you were saying, where they made this overnight decision, because when you're growing a business, you have to make decisions. And when you make a decision, you then have to turn the ship, you know, and go in that direction. And so the decision was made that they were going to move their warehouse, I believe it was to Kentucky, where the UPS headquarters is, because of logistics.
Yeah.
And so Tony, I think it was chief operating officer, there was two of them, they immediately hop in the car and they start driving. It's like a 36 hours of driving time, oh my or something God. Like that. no hotel stops.
Yeah.
And like in the book, you're just reading this and it like brings you into the car where I'll do my best not to like spit into the microphone from laughter. But I think it was either like Tony, who was in the passenger seat, they'd like 3 hours on, 3 hours off. They just go so the other person could rest because they had to get there as quickly as possible because they're running a big operation and you got to make sure everything is seamless in this big transition. He wakes up because they're like crushing Red Bulls left and right to stay awake. And his business partner is over the wheel taking water as you're drinking water right now. And he's splashing himself in the face with the water to keep him awake. Because he's like, that's how tired they are. They're just, you know, but.
The hustle, yeah.
The hustle, yeah. It's just like early a couple days. Of pirates in yeah. their car just oh being like, gosh. We got to do this.
Yeah, I mean, that reminds me of our trip to Colorado. I think we were trying to make it to an event and just didn't stop the whole way, like just taking shifts. And
oh, the blockchain event you went to.
Yeah, right yeah. after being in the backyard last year. I mean, there's something about just like sending it, you know, it's a really good feeling when you can, you have the resources and just the team to help you get there. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go with the team.
Yeah, that African proverb.
For
yeah.
sure, for sure. So as we finish up here, can you just share a couple of your upcoming goals or a couple projects you're working on? And
yeah, I have my five goals written right here.
Oh, perfect. So five is your magic number?
I have five goals. So if you
what bear, is it about five?
If you bear with me, I'm gonna. Well, you want to talk for a moment while I grab it?
Yeah. So Dustin's a pretty goal-oriented person. So I'm curious to see what he's got here. We're three months away from beating the backyard. So I've spent today working on some of my goals. It's about 12 weeks, which is an important time for us. It's a great focus period. Oh, Dustin's got a nice little calendar here. All right, ready for it.
I picked five. You know, so I've gone through a couple different methods or how I keep track of goals and being productive and things like that in life. And so I'll try different things during right. different years or decades. Or but this I can't one, say decades because I haven't been around that long. Enough. But this one was from, and I'd have to do my due diligence to actually know if it's true, but we said that Warren Buffett, pick five things to focus on.
Yeah.
And you know, you only have so much time, so pick five. So I'm focused on five things for this year. And even for next year, once one of them gets knocked off, I can add something new. So the number one is my mantra, which is live simply, travel more. And number two is Podtex, which is my podcast technician business. And number three is USGA, which is the United States Golf Association. So I'd like to get back to competitive golf.
Wow.
And perhaps one day make a USGA event. And then the fourth one is Bull Ring. So Bull Ring is a business pitch competition series that I produce for student athletes so that during the intermission of sporting events, we have a business pitch competition and we provide them access to capital so the crowd can pull out their smartphones and invest in entrepreneurs on the spot and receive stock certificates. So, Dylan, you were part of the inaugural Bull Ring as one of the business pitch judges. Maybe we can have you chime in there for a minute about that experience.
Yeah,
it was the pilot. You know, we're working towards the full-on experience.
That was awesome. Yeah, getting to hear you know, a couple of the fan businesses that were getting started was great and literally happened in like a fighting ring, which I wasn't expecting at all. And that was great energy from the crowd you know, people wanted to support local business. You know, we find that all the time is people want to support local business. They just need to hear about it more. So I think that project of yours is really incredible. And, you know, I think we'll definitely get some good attention.
And then the fifth one is to become the mayor of DC.
That one's got a lot of points. Can I see that one?
So what I'm starting to write out is, so for, this did not exist in 2018, but it does exist for 2022, which is they just passed public financing for campaigns.
Okay.
So the way it works, starting with this will be the first mayor's election that they do it. assuming it still stays intact, but if we get 1,000 DC residents to donate $40.
When,
then we get $250,000 in public financing.
So it's kind of like a threshold thing.
Yeah, it's like a threshold thing. I think that, I actually think there's better ways to go about it. Like what they do, I believe it's in Seattle, where they give citizens like $25 vouchers, and it forces the candidates to meet the people in order to collect the vouchers.
Yeah. I mean, wow, I'm so admiring, Dustin. I mean, the people that you've met, I mean, I've actually been out campaigning with you, and it's just pretty incredible to talk to everybody, you know, actually smile and speak to everybody and ask them what matters to them, you know, what could they see differently. And, you know, being on the campaign trail and participating in that was something that I definitely hold pretty close to me. Is this a really special experience. So looking forward to supporting you in the future and you know, developing your platform a little bit more. And I think it's just, you know, going to get better. I think last time we were saying Dustin for president. Is that in the future?
No.
One thing at a time.
And the, you know, I'm grateful that you and a bunch of the Meta Creative street team came out and helped to campaign, connect with people. And I'm excited that it's not just helping Dustin for mayor the campaign. It's also figuring out how to help Meta. So, you know, since the campaign, this year we did the Trashathon with the DC Wheel. So I'm excited that how that's going to evolve on Earth Day. So yeah. Like the political campaigning is evolving still, even during these off years, with people that I met while campaigning for mayor. And we're doing things that are not connected to political campaigning.
Yeah, all year long.
All year long. Picking up trash on Earth Day in a fun way with riding skateboards and bicycles while you do it.
Yeah. Now that's incredible. And I think that's one of the things we really aim to do with Beauty in the Backyard is it's not just this one weekend. It's like this lifestyle that, you know, we talk about, and it's this regenerative lifestyle that we are aiming to inspire. And if you think of it as just one campaign or, you know, one instance, it doesn't sustain, I would say. You know, it really has to be scaled, right? You know, it has to continue to happen.
Just grabbing some water real quick.
Oh, for sure. So, Dustin, where can people kind of find more about what you're working on and how can people support you? Feel free to drop some links, and how can people connect with you?
So my phone number is 202-670-1615. I'll say that again. 202-670-1615. That's the best way. Send me a text message. And my email is dc@dustincantor.com. dc@dustincantor.com. You spell Cantor, C-A-N-T-E-R, like a horse's gallop.
Oh, perfect. And Dustin, serious, you guys, send him a text message. He's more than willing to respond and reply and talk to you about anything from traveling to boxing to politics to entrepreneurship.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's amazing. So thanks for joining us. This has been an episode of the MetaMakers Podcast, Collaborative